Birth, Volume 3, The Gathering, Chapter 11. "Good morning, Shelley," said Orphan as she opened the door to her small apartment in Building C. "Come on in. I was just about ready." "Coffee?" asked Shelley as she fluffed her freshly dried hair. "No, thanks. Hadid asked me to stick with you for the next few days. There's some kind of killer drone floating about the place." "A what? A killer drone? In here?" asked Shelley. "Yeah. It's supposed to be really small, and he said it could be running an automatic with some kind of facial recognition program. I did a report on something like that a few years back. They're like assassination drones. I gave the Pentagon a rash from the public outcry on collateral damage. Lots of kids were being killed from drone strikes ordered by the president. So they came up with these little drones that can fly up your skirt and kill you. Just you," she said, turning off the kitchen light. "Well, there's one of them out there. Anyway, they're searching for it. And they have some technology to help. I'm not sure about it, but we have to get you over to Building E to make your broadcast. You ready?" he asked, with his hand extended. "Yeah, let me get my purse. Can you carry this?" she said, handing Orphan her portfolio. "You bet," he said quietly. "What's wrong?" she asked, looking at his downturned eyes. "Last night, Katie was shot," said Orphan. "Holy Christ! What the hell? How? Where?" she said as she searched for his eyes. "They were out by one of the outer doors in the carts late last night. Out just for a ride. Hadid said there was an incident with the guards outside," he said, still trying to hold back some information. "Outside? What do you mean outside?" she said, pushed. "Hey, more friend and less reporter," he said, raising his voice a little. "I'm sorry, but is she dead?" she asked, suppressing her urge to interrogate him. "She's at the hospital. Last I heard, she's out of surgery and still unconscious," he said. "Okay, that's it. We're going to the hospital," she said, dropping her shoes on the floor in front of her. "No can do. Hadid said to get you to Building E. There's nothing you can do for her right now," said Orphan, switching into the child soldier his father had made of him. "To hell with that. I don't care. I'm going to the hospital, with or without you," she snapped. "The mission is," he began. "Screw the mission. We have 2 hours before the broadcast," she said, pulling at the portfolio in his hands. "You're angry when you're beautiful," he said, smiling at her effort to pull it away. "You should know. I don't work that way, Orphan," she said, gritting her teeth. "Okay, okay, I'll go with you. I'll tell Hadid you took me hostage," he said, lowering his voice a little. "Damn right I did. You're my bodyguard. Now act like it, and not my dad," she said, releasing the portfolio and stepping back to stab her feet into her shoes. Orphan opened the door and let her out into the hallway, and they walked to the elevator. There were a couple of other people waiting at the elevator, as well as a soldier with a weapon slung around his neck. They nodded to him, and he responded with a short half-smile. "Please stand back from the elevator doors," said the soldier as the elevator doors began to open. He poked his head inside the empty elevator and looked around and stepped backwards into the hallway. "All clear," he said. "Jesus, they're checking elevators?" asked Shelley, still irritated. "Better safe than dead," said Orphan, making sure his small ceramic knife was still tucked into his vest pocket. "They never give up, do they? I guess now we are public enemy number one," said Shelley. "Everybody wants you," said Orphan, smiling at her and putting his hand on her shoulder as they squeezed together to make room for everyone going down. "Yeah, fame is not what I'd hoped it to be," she said. "You're saving the world. Someone out there doesn't want it saved. My dad says heroes always go first," said Orphan. "Yeah, they die first, too," said Shelley quietly. "Not much glory in being killed by a million-dollar bug," said Orphan. "I picked a bad day to forget my fly swatter," said Shelley, smiling nervously. The elevator doors opened to the back of another soldier standing in front of the elevator. He turned his head to the right, and then the left, when he touched his throat microphone. "Station one clear," he said. He stepped backward and to the side to hold the elevator door open and let them into the hallway. The small group spilled out into the lobby and headed for the double glass doors leading to the subterranean town. Another soldier was standing outside the doors with a small plastic parabolic dish in his hands. He was wearing headphones. One of the people pushed open the glass door on the right, and they each walked through it onto the concrete entry pad outside the building. Orvan went through first and held back his hands to lead Shelley through the door. "We'll take that cart to Building A. It's not a long walk, but Hadid said to use the carts to move around out here. I guess the drones aren't too fast," he said. "Where's Dick's car when we need it?" asked Shelley, trying to relieve the tension in the quiet cavern. "Or my raptor," said Orvan. "I love your raptor," said Shelley, squeezing her arm around his waist. He helped Shelley into the passenger side and ran around to unplug the cart. He jumped into the driver's seat and pressed the accelerator slightly to back up away from the curb. In one fluid motion, he switched the cart into forward and pointed the cart to the street in front of them, turning left toward Building A. The air was cool and dry, and it felt good to have the wind flowing over their faces, if only for a short ride. Within 3 minutes, he pulled up to the second charging station and parked. They got out together, and he plugged in the cart. "Seen the morning glory lately?" said the soldier at the door. "Pancake batter," said Shelley and Orvan together, and the soldier opened the door for them. They walked across the lobby to the elevator and pressed the button as the soldier, standing there, kept scanning the ceiling and the hallway like he knew what he was looking for. The doors opened and they stepped inside and pressed the hospital floor. "You know I'm with you," said Orvan as the doors closed. "Well, if my arm felt better, I might kick your ass," said Shelley, smiling at him broadly. "Sounds like fun," said Orvan, turning to face her blue eyes. Her naked face was nearly without freckles now that they had been underground for so many weeks. Her hair smelled like flowers, and the elevator spotlights reflected off her shiny teeth sitting just behind her curvy lips. "Stop standing there all photoshopped. Kiss me," she said softly. He leaned forward and tilted his head slightly to place his nose beside hers. His lips did not move, yet. He drew her into his lungs and gently touched her lips with his. There was no sound. There was no effort to dive into her. The frustrating and unsatisfying contact made his heart jump in his chest. He circled like a falcon, placing its shadow over its prey. His youth evaporated from her flaming cheeks as the air around them collapsed to the desire inside them. And then he withdrew, without closing his eyes, turned to stand beside her again, and they waited silently for the elevator doors to open. "Let's go check on Katie," he said. He stepped forward first, freeing the tiny mouse inside her to scamper quietly forward. They walked up to the nurse's station and asked for Katie's room. "She's in recovery. Down the hall and then left. Just look for the others. She's kind of popular, I guess," said the nurse. "We're family," said Shelley as she turned her head over her shoulder to speak to the nurse. The hospital floor was large for such a small community. It was fully staffed with civil servants and career combat medical doctors. It was the one place that proved this facility was designed to be the nation's backup command and control center in times of war. Every nurse and every doctor had extensive battle experience, particularly with gunshot wounds and injuries caused by explosive devices. "Hey, Dick. Hi, Lorraine. Bet. How's she doing?" asked Orvan as they walked into the room. "They have her in an induced coma," said Lorraine, the first to speak. "Why are they doing that?" asked Shelley, unable to suppress the reporter in her. "The bullet pierced her lung. They fixed it from the inside. She has to be kept from moving for a few days," said Dick blankly. "She's going to be okay, right?" asked Orvan. "Oh, it's going to leave a mark," said Bet. "Her strapless days are over," she said, grabbing Dick around the shoulder with her arm. "Have you seen Kyle lately?" asked Shelley. "He practically stayed the night with us. He just left and went to the lab. Gets his best ideas under sleep deprivation," said Dick, looking up from Katie's bed for a moment. "What's he building now?" asked Shelley. "Some kind of generator. We caught a glimpse of it back in Tennessee one night. He's looking for that seam," said Dick. "The what?" asked Orphan. "The place where space-time is stitched together. It gets pretty spacey from there," said Dick. "She's going to be all right, Dick. I have it on good authority," said Lorraine. "I have to go. I shouldn't keep the president waiting." "No worries, Lorraine. Thanks for coming and for your support," said Dick, hugging her firmly. "Don't forget to sleep yourself," said Lorraine. "Hey, that recliner is actually pretty comfy," said Dick. "I'll go with you," said Bet, as they both made their way out the door, touching Orphan and Shelley one more time. "Take care of her, Mr. Daring," said Shelley, putting her hand on his shoulder as she turned for the door. "Thanks, guys, for coming by," said Dick. "We'll see you later, under better circumstances," said Orphan, shaking Dick's hand. The two of them walked out of Katie's room silently and headed for the elevator. Orphan nodded at the same soldier that was standing by the elevator when they arrived. He pressed the button and turned to look Shelley closely in the face. "She's going to be okay." Shelley put her hands on Orphan's hips and looked into his eyes. "We are all so close to the other side," said Shelley. "You mean the veil or something?" asked Orphan quietly. "I've learned more than I ever wanted to about this over the past few months. I'm living and breathing this stuff every day and then telling the world about it. Orphan, I know it all sounds churchy, but the fact that the planet is coming apart kind of makes it undeniable," she said as the elevator doors opened. "Oh, there's a whole world of people out there denying it. I'm not much of a believer. Wasn't raised that way. My dad taught me to only trust one-third of what people say," said Orphan as they entered the elevator and the doors closed. "Do you trust me?" asked Shelley. "I was with you because my dad asked me to." "It's different now," said Orphan, still guarding his heart. "How different?" asked Shelley. "New territory for me. Step by step saves the arm for the fingers, my dad says." "I'm not going to bite off your fingers," said Shelley, half smiling. "I might nibble on them a little, but I won't bite too hard." "I can spare a few fingers to find out," said Orphan, smiling back and bumping her with his shoulder. The elevator door opened. The guard backed into the door and waited for the nod from the soldier at the outer doors. He stepped forward, allowing them to exit. They walked forward to the glass double doors, and the guard opened one of the doors, looking both ways outside. "Let's get to Building E," she said. "Right this way, Miss LaSalle," said Orphan. "It is, miss, isn't it?" she said, swaying into her seat in the electric cart. "Keep your arms inside the vehicle, please," he said, like a tour operator, and he mashed the accelerator. Within seconds, the cart was moving along at 12 miles an hour down the street in front of all the buildings, now busy with people moving in all the windows and in all the lobbies. Within 5 minutes, they were rolling up to the curb of Building E. Orphan stepped out of the cart and walked around to the front to retrieve the power cord and plug it into the cart. Shelley was looking right at him as what seemed like a black pebble hit the Lexan windshield in front of her and exploded. The flash was so bright, she shut her eyes and threw her hands up in front of her face. Pain shot through her left arm as the broken bone seemed like it was coming apart from the sudden movement. Her ears were numb, and the smell of burnt plastic and hair filled her nose. She brushed the cinders away from the smoldering holes in her dress like she was on fire. The smoke was stinging her nose and lips, and she rolled out of the cart and onto the ground to get under the rolling white cloud in front of her. The pain in her knees that struck the concrete was far away from the fear that swallowed her in its darkness. She started to scream, but she could not hear her own voice. It was as though someone had shoved gum in her ears, and her chest was sore from the concussion. She started to hear voices far away. She could see shiny black boots shuffling around her, and she felt someone grab her shoulders and her feet. She looked up into the daylight bulbs far up against the cavern ceiling, and she went to sleep. She forced her eyes to open again, and the smell was still there, the hair, the smoke. She tried to stand up, but someone pressed against her shoulders, holding her down against the stretcher. She rolled her head forward to see a white blanket over her, and there were red spots up and down the blanket. She wiggled her toes and touched each of her fingers with her thumbs. She reached up and touched her face and felt the wetness on her cheeks, and then looked at her hands, red with blood. She was alive. She knew that. She felt her face again, and there were some small places that she now could tell were bleeding. But her teeth were there, and both her eyes were still okay. It was minor, but it was so incredibly loud. The blast, the flash, the cart. Her mind was racing now. What the hell happened? Maybe the batteries in the cart blew up. Orphan was just plugging in the cart. The cart. Orphan. Oh my God, Orphan. Orphan, she screamed, although she could not really hear her voice yet. Hold on, miss. Stay down. Help is on the way, said the male voice above her. She looked up to see a green helmet looking down at her. He was young, but somehow she knew he had seen battle before. He wasn't scared. He was confident and experienced. You're going to be okay. Just hang on, he said as she watched his mouth and lined it up with the muffled sound she heard. Orphan, is he all right? She asked the face above her. I'm sorry, miss. I don't have that information, he said, like he knew just what to say. There was a loud screaming sound that stopped as soon as she heard it. Within seconds, a young man in green scrubs was looking into her eyes with the flashlight. Hey, I need 2 cc's of adrenaline here. She's in shock. Don't jack her up. We need transport stat, said the young man, and his face disappeared. Get that light up here, shouted one of the soldiers. Up there? Asked another with his hand pointing up above Building E. Right there, soldier. Follow your training, soldier. First responder targets, he shouted, and get her out of here. Cover her face with something, he screamed. Her face? Said the soldier above her. Jesus, soldier, he wasn't the target. She was. Cover her face before they hit her again, said the man, lowering his voice a little. What does he mean? She asked as she tried to wave the sheet away from her face, being covered like she was dead. I'm sorry, miss. I don't have that, he began to repeat. Don't bullshit me, soldier, she screamed. Where's Orphan? He paused for a moment and looked down into her soot-filled eyes that poured tears out the corners and onto the small pillow under her slightly raised head. He's gone. I'm sorry. He's just gone, he said slowly and kindly, squeezing her shoulders and pulling the sheet gently over her eyes. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is my fault. Please don't let him be dead, she sobbed under the sheet covering her face. She could feel the stretcher being picked up and walked. She felt like she was being put down, and then she heard a vehicle door latch. She knew she was being driven away from the scene and back toward the hospital she had left a few minutes before. Before she could focus on time, the sheet was pulled away from her face, and she could see the ceiling lights in the elevator. There was a male nurse standing above her in green scrubs and using his gloved hands to gently move her hair out of her face. You're going to be okay, he said. What happened? She asked. The driver said it was a drone attack. It was going for you and smacked into the clear windshield in front of you and exploded. Quite a blast from such a little drone, he said. I have a broadcast at 10 o'clock, she said. I don't think you'll make it. You need some Steri-Strips and a change of clothes. We just want to make sure you don't get infected from the burns, he said. Burns? Where? She asked. Phosphorus burns. They're small, but they need to be cleaned and treated. We'll get you fixed up in no time, said the nurse as the doors opened and he rolled the gurney out of the elevator. They killed him. It was only 20 years old, and they killed him," she said, crying again. Hey, I know how you feel. I'm not going to try to tell you everything will be okay, but most of us in here have lost people, just like you have. It hurts, but you're alive, and there's the mission at hand. You can't give up now. Hang in there, and the doctor will be here in a minute." "Hey, Shelley, Jesus, you're all right," said Agent Smith as he suddenly appeared in the exam room. "Oh, my God, Agent Smith, they got him. They killed him," said Shelley, reaching for him with her right arm. He stepped forward and grabbed her hand in his. "They brought the battle to us today. You're the face of the change the enemy does not want. They went after it today. Orphan got in the way," said Smith with his agent tone. "It was so loud," she said, trying to consider everything. "I have used those drones many times. They're like little flying grenades," said Smith. "Is he..." She could not bring herself to say it. "I'm so sorry. He's dead, Shelley. He never felt a thing. It was completely painless," said Smith flatly. "It's my fault. I made him take me," she said, with the tears washing the tiny open wound on her cheek. "You don't know that. That drone could have waited for days until you arrived. It was programmed to move when it sees your face. It sits there like a bug, and then it executes its target. Don't blame yourself. Blame the son of a bitch that sent that drone. I know. I used to be that son of a bitch," he said with an edge. "I just can't believe he's gone. He was so young," she said. "He would want you to keep going. Don't give up. We're going to get through this thing," said Smith. "His father sent him to take care of me," she said. "That is how important you are. The man sent his own son to protect you. You won't let them down," said Smith. "No, I won't let them down. The love I feel when I'm talking to that camera is so strong. It's like I can feel those people out there, watching, stopping what they're doing so they don't miss a word. I can almost feel the change in the world each time I stand up from that anchor desk," she said, gaining more control over her emotions. "It is changing. Riker feels it too. So does Lorraine. You are the face and voice of security that gives people hope that even if they don't get through this thing alive, they will be all right. Let these guys patch you up, and then let's show those assholes that they cannot stop you," said Smith. "Okay, for Orphan," said Shelley. "For Orphan," said Smith. "I'll be right here. I have to make some calls," said Smith. "Okay, I'm not going anywhere," said Shelley.